Welcome, everybody, to the Disco Twins, a Star Trek Discovery watch-along podcast. I'm your host, Asterios Kokonos. With me is your other host, E. Rich McCoy. E. Rich, this was your idea.
Right. I love Star Trek Discovery. I finally found somebody else who actually likes Star Trek Discovery. So I said, why not do a podcast where we talk about Star Trek Discovery and fucking give it to the Orville haters, or lovers, I guess, in this case.
You know, I have to watch Orville still. Maybe for our next episode, we could do the season
side by side.
Yes, season two premiere of Discovery, season two premiere of the Orville.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I don't know, I kind of figure, like, when it comes to the Orville, it looks like they're not really focusing on comedy anymore from the advertisements I'm seeing.
Interesting.
And it looks kind of like they're just making Galaxy Quest or TNG Lite,
right,
where it's just kind of like, look, these people are funny and interesting, but they are on missions that they're trying to succeed at.
Right. So 20-year-old TNG leftovers, essentially.
I don't want to start off shitting on a show I have. Because, wait, have you seen the Orville?
I have. I've seen about the first half of the first season of Orville. I quit after that.
Okay. Well, I mean, here's what I will say, again, as someone who has not seen any of it.
Mm-hmm.
Shows get better in their second season.
Right. Totally.
I'm very excited about starting Orville in season two, because it's like the writers have had all summer to think about what they would do differently. Like,
true,
they've had time to respond to feedback. It's interesting. It's like the first 12 episodes of a TV show are often made in a vacuum. It's not, you know, because it's like by the time I worked in television for 11 years behind the scenes, as a producer, as an editor, as like a writer's assistant, I kind of did everything you could do. What is it? You know, it's like by the time your show is premiering, you're like halfway through your first season.
Right.
So you know, I mean, I remember with Caprica, which is a show that I really, really enjoy.
Yeah, but it really picked up in the second season, especially.
Well, Caprica only lasted one season, but it was like a bifurcated season.
Yeah, that second half of the first season, right?
Yes, exactly.
When they went into the VR world or whatever. Yeah, that was so cool.
Yeah, I remember like in the second half of the first season, it getting better. And then also like Battlestar Galactica and Discovery both have terrible pilots.
Right.
But
are not really indicative of what the rest of the show is going to be. Right.
Exactly. They have great follow. Like, Battlestar Galactica's first, like,
the miniseries. Like, yeah.
Well, Battlestar Galactica's first hour-long episode, 33,
yeah,
is like one of the best episodes.
It's
of
killer.
Galactica.
I literally just watched it because they just started doing a Battlestar Galactica podcast with Trisha Helfer, like, doing commentary on it. And yeah, 33 is amazing. 33 is such a well-paced just episode of television. Yeah, it's really
good. Yeah, they're all on stims. They're all like yoked to the
nobody's
gills.
Nobody's sleeping.
On...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then
James Olmos was making the actors not sleep because he's like, we're going to get into character. We're going to all not sleep at all. Like, he was legit into it, so.
Fuck, yeah. That's fucking great.
Yeah, yeah.
And man, imagine being on that set and like every day you get to hang out with like Michael Hogan or what's the name of the actress that plays the president?
Mary McDonald.
Yeah, like Mary McDonald. Like,
right,
you get to like hang out with like acting royalty all day. Cause I get the sense that like it, you know, it's almost, it's Hogan, it's McDonald, and then it's a bunch of Canadians.
Right. Canadian nobodies who have been in maybe one thing. And then that's it. And they're getting like, as fast as you can go, you are just doing the best acting you'll probably do in your entire career instantly. That is definitely an experience.
Yeah, it's like when I think of like the guy that played Hilo, I'm just like, I get the sense that you've been in a lot of Canadian soap operas.
Right, right.
And nothing else. Well, look, I don't want to. Oh, my God. Let's set the table for what we're here to do today.
Right. We've gotten into Battlestar Galactica before we even got really into Star Trek Discovery itself.
And Orville. But to wrap that up, it's like Discovery's pilot is terrible. Uh-huh. But then the third episode of Discovery is amazing. Right, much like right. 33 is amazing and the BSG. But anyway, we watched all of the short treks.
Yes, yes.
Do you want to explain what the short treks are?
Yeah, so a little bit after the first season of Star Trek Discovery was done, they announced that the second season was happening, and they also announced that they were doing short treks, which are essentially these 15-minute bites that follow like one character, essentially, through some little short story type thing, and then that's it. Like, basically, you just get the 15 minutes with the character, and then you go on to a different character. So they will be doing more of these, actually. They have announced that they're going to be doing more short treks. So I kind of hope we get different characters next time. Like, don't just focus in on Saru or Tilly or like any of these kind of one-off, one-shot characters. So I'm really hoping we get more cool stuff. Like, you could so easily do a Captain Lorca, like the original Captain Lorca. Just show us 15 minutes of him either being a badass or doing something when he gets transported to the Mirror Universe or whatever. Like, that would be so cool to see.
That's pretty fucking brilliant. For some reason, I really like the character of Prime Lorca. A
right.
character we've never met and don't know much about.
Yeah.
Because I just think to myself, well, if Mirror Lorca is this much of a badass.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What the hell is Prime Lorca? Because it's like, you know, I like both, what's her name? The Asian American actress.
Yeah, oh God.
Empress.
Her name's Giorgio in the
yeah,
in the show.
Because I like both Giorgios.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm.
We only meet Prime Burnham, but you get the sense that Mira Burnham is like this crazy Oh, and
yeah.
then Captain Killy fucking rules.
One of my favorite moments is R. Tilly having to pretend to be Captain Killy.
Yes.
That for me, this show can be so much fun when it lets the characters kind of go loose. And, like, that was so we had only seen Tilly for, like, 5 or 6 episodes at that point in the Mirror show. But you so instantly got that she was kind of putting on airs of trying to become this thing that she's just not. And she did a great job of it, too. Like, she just sold
it. Oh, I was honestly just thinking about that today, you know. Like, the Tilly character, mm-hmm. I feel, is she starts out very she's like a character of necessity.
Right, right.
Because
she's
it's
the best
like,
friend character.
Yeah, yeah. And very specifically because, well, they make Burnham as unlikable as possible.
Right.
So you have to, it's like, well, somebody has to like our main character. Our main character who just like knocked out her boss, stuffed mm-hmm. her boss under a desk, like almost killed a bunch of Klingons, like mm-hmm. shot a dude she wasn't supposed to shoot. Like
was literally like going to be imprisoned for the rest of her life before the events of the series actually got going. Yeah, like that
yeah.
is where she starts out.
Yeah, before fucking evil, before Mirror Lorca's like, I need to use you as a tool. Which is also fucking fantastic, because it's mm-hmm. just like, because in all season one, he's just like, it's destiny. And it's like, no, it's not. You're controlling everything. Like,
oh,
you
right,
have this
right.
all planned out, which is very anti-Trek, I think, in
uh-huh.
a very cool way. But anyway, yeah, so it's like, all right. Tilly likes Burnham.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Tilly like Burnham? Because someone's got to like Burnham. Like, otherwise,
right, right.
you know? And then it's like, what's Tilly's arc? Like, Tilly wants to be a captain, which is like a very facile, simple Star
right.
Trek arc.
That is Naruto. That is literally
yes.
Naruto's character.
Yes, exactly. So to then have Tilly immediately be Captain Killy.
Right.
I was like, wow, they paid this off right away. They mm-hmm. paid it off in a way I didn't expect. They did a great job paying this off.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, she is such a, like, I don't know if she's on the spectrum or supposed to be, like, kind of But then you also see her like at that party in the Groundhog Day episode where Mudd just keeps repeating things over and over again. And you see that at a party, she kind of like loosens up and is like totally like a loose cannon, essentially. And this character is super interesting. And we should probably like transition into talking about the first short track. Yeah. Because that's kind of her episode as part of these short stories. So her episode is essentially a stowaway alien species has come aboard the Discovery. And it turns out that she's royalty on the planet that she's from. And it's basically just Tilly having problems with her mother. Kind of she's got those issues that a lot of people can probably definitely understand when people have problems with their parents. And I guess those two characters can kind of share that and bond between one another. But it's so weird because it has to happen within 15 minutes, essentially. You have to have these two people meet, understand each other's plight, and then part ways in the same amount of time. So it doesn't quite get the development you kind of feel like it needs, but it just doesn't, I guess.
I definitely agree with you. The other limitation that is clear, like, forget the time limitation, they are also very clearly limited
to that one set.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all of the short treks are very one room episode-y,
right?
But in a, you know, play for television. But the thing is, the acting is so good, and I care about the characters. And I think the writing on these short treks is so good that it does not feel, because Battlestar Galactica would do the same thing. Like, I remember over the summer, Battlestar Galactica had like this like 6-part series that all took place on like a life raft. It was like Hitchcock's Lifeboat, but in space. And it's like, yeah, I could kind of tell you've only got the Raptor set here, guys.
Right, right.
But speaking of shorthand, this episode also uses shorthand, which is, it opens on a conversation with an overbearing mother who doesn't understand her kid.
Right, right.
And that is very classic Trek, because I think one of the reasons that everybody... I think one of the reasons that, like, women specifically love TNG is they can very much relate to the Deanna Troi, Lakshmana Troi, kind of the you know what it's like Debbie Reynolds tap dancing at Carrie Fisher's birthday party, kind of like you're stealing focus, mom.
Oh,
like
it's mom again. Mom's gonna take the spotlight here. I think.
Yeah.
They almost train you while you're watching The Next Generation to feel the same way that Deanna Troi feels when Lakshmana comes onto set, because they're, oh, we're having another Lakshmana Troi episode. I see what's going on here. And then it carries over into DS9, which was insane.
Yeah, yeah. Sure
I thought
does.
I was
yeah.
free.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, okay. I mean, like, though, like, oh, and then also it's like, and she wants to fuck your boss.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Lakshmana Troi spends a lot of time trying to fuck your boss, which is just awkward. But so it's like my thought has always been like, yeah, look, these Lakshmana Troi episodes aren't for me, but at the same time, like, I don't hate them. I'm just like, yeah, these are very clearly for women.
It's broad, raunchy humor, as raunchy as Star Trek in the 90s was willing to get. They throw around F-bombs in Discovery, so.
Yeah, I do love that one of Tilly's things is that she curses, because she definitely says holy shit in this episode.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel about Star Trek kind of hewing closer to how modern culture tends to treat something like swearing?
So far, every time they've done it, it's been funny. Mm-hmm. Like, if they overdo it, like, if they do it once and it's not funny anymore, then I'll complain about it. But, like, so far, like... you know, it's like they're playing with a hot knife, but they're juggling it correctly.
Right, right. And I mean, just between that, the use of like more modern style music, like also in that Mud episode where he's traveling back and back, like the party they're having is a very modern looking party, which seems so distant from what the Federation looks like and behaves like in everything Star Trek going forward, really.
But I do have to say, though, I remember... The episode of the original series with Kang, with the evil Kang. Like, have you seen this episode?
I don't recall. I definitely recognize Kang, but
it's the one with the Shakespeare murderer.
Okay. All right.
Okay, for listeners who don't know, like, so there's this episode of Star Trek where, like, there's this dude who's, like, an actor. He's, like, an interstellar Shakespearean actor. But it turns out that he might also be a war criminal who murdered half the population of the colony that Kirk was born on.
Yeah.
And so in order to get information on this guy, Kirk goes to a 1960s house party. And, like, hits on this girl. And it's very clearly, like, 60s, a swinging house party. There's another episode, the one where Kirk is court-martialed because they think he might have killed a dude accidentally. He might have called for red alert the wrong time. Uh-huh. Like, they go to a bar, and it's, like, Kirk and McCoy, like, are wearing, like, their drinking jackets, and they're, like, flirting with a lady, and it's
so
you know, like, these things are kind of always of their time.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think? I mean, that's just what I think.
It seems like we're on a sliding scale where, like, certainly the effects of the day will influence how the show is able to portray things like space travel or like what the inside of a starship looks like, but then, like, the cultural interplay there as well, where in 100 years, if they're still making Star Trek, God, I hope they're still making Star Trek in 100 years, will the aesthetics of the 2150s or whatever carry over into how Star Trek is viewed? Like, if we've got some weird, strange, like, horn music that's super popular, is that what everyone on the Starship Enterprise, I don't know, 50 series from now, is that the kind of music that they'll still be listening to then?
Well, I mean, I think an interesting way to look at, like, what, you know, what is Star Trek, what feels like Star Trek, is the new Star Wars movies.
Oh.
Because in Episode 7, they're all using, like, computer consoles with big click-clack buttons.
Right.
And they're all, like, flipping switches and shit.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's like, well, on one hand, I don't think I would have minded if they had updated it to touchscreens or something. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it is cool. Like,
it's the aesthetic. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Star Wars is, that lived-in, dirty universe where their technology all looks like it could have been from the 70s version of the future. And if they stay within that, people will generally think it's Star Wars-y. So.
Yeah. It's kind of like you compare that to the prequels.
Mm-hmm. Chrome-plated. Yeah, shiny.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about the prequels is, it's like, the reason I don't think they're good is that they feel like they're not connected to any culture.
Right.
It's like, okay, in the original series, there's straight up a running plot line about how there's now female yeomen. And Kirk doesn't know how he feels about it.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
At one point, someone's like, there might even be a female captain one day. And Kirk's like, oh, brother. Kirk's like, I don't know how I feel about that. You know, so, but you get the sense that you're not supposed to agree with Kirk, that Kirk is kind of like an Archie Bunker type. Mm-hmm. You know, in current Trek, you know, they're using, like, disco music, or they're using Sabotage in the Kelvin Trek. You know, it's kind of like, well, these are, you know, like, you know, obviously they are, like, they're using, like, hyper relevant to the time plot lines. And you could be like, well, would they still be talking about this in the future? But then it's like, you look at the prequels and it's like, this looks like it was made by an alien who's never had a human conversation in his life. What do you think? I'm talking too much.
No, that certainly is George Lucas's shtick. I think he thought, if Star Wars is the 70s, then maybe the prequels, which takes place 20 years before then, is like the 50s then. So, like, gold, chrome-plated, like, shiny, like, that's the aesthetic of, like, diners and shit like that of the time. But, like, all the ships aren't like that in the prequels, and that only really works for Naboo. And then Naboo also has, like, the classical architecture and stuff, so I don't fucking know what was going on there. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like with Star Trek, the like Picard was such a like Shakespearean kind of guy where he was always like able to rant off with like all these older style references that you would understand would still be around, because if it's still around now, then hopefully it's still around in the future. It's just when you bring in things that are modern day, it feels a little bit too close to what we're doing now. And then, so the future, you'd have to assume, oh, then I guess that's classical music then as to now. So like Beastie Boys Sabotage is now something that gets played on an oldies station from 200 years ago or whatever, which is insane. And also Sabotage should not be able to exist in the Star Trek universe because there's literally a Star Trek reference in that song. I can't believe, how did J.J. Abrams not know that?
What's the reference?
Here, I will look it up. It's fucking hilarious that this is a thing. Let's do Sabotage lyrics. It's only about Spock. They literally say Spock in the song.
Oh yeah, you're fucking right, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
No, are you thinking of Intergalactic? Like a pinch to the neck from Mr. Spock. Intergalactic, planetary, planetary, intergalactic, intergalactic. Another dimension.
I think you're right there. Huh.
Oh.
But then I guess you just have to say that the Beastie Boys did not record Intergalactic in the Star Trek Prime universe or whatever. That's the only song.
We have to know more about this bullshit. Oh, by the way, in case listeners haven't heard, apparently Star Trek 4 has been canceled.
Canceled. Ooh. That
the
hurts
thing
me.
That I heard was it was going to be a fucking...
Chris Hemsworth and Chris Pine together?
I heard it was going to be... I heard also that they had handed it to Tarantino.
No. He's doing some other Star Trek project that's kind of... I don't know if it was separate completely. I think they were doing multiple Star Trek projects. Tarantino had something else. I have no fucking idea what he was going to do.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's a shame because it's like, look, that first movie is still really good. And that third movie is still fun.
I like the third movie a lot. I think that Star Trek Beyond movie is pretty good.
I don't think it is as memorable because I think it is just an... I think it's pretty much just a two-hour-long episode.
TV episode. Right.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, it's the same thing for Insurrection. And Insurrection's like the best of those movies. Because, yeah, it is just like... It's a two-hour-long TV episode, but I like TV.
Right. And I think it's better than Into Darkness, where they're just like, we don't know what to do, so we're just going to do a copy-paste and then hope that this works out.
Oh my god, Into Darkness is like terrible.
Yeah.
Remember that scene where they murder 40 Klingons for no reason?
Yeah.
And then I'm supposed to like all of these characters? Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, there's my hero, James T. Kirk. He just shot a bunch of people trying to defend their home planet. It's a good thing they look like monsters, I guess.
Yeah. And then wait, so in that movie, Benedict Cumberbatch Khan can just warp anywhere? He warps off of Kronos onto Earth.
Oh, I don't remember this.
Because I know that in the first movie, though, they do establish you can, like, warp people in crazy spaces and stuff like that.
Oh, you mean, like, teleportation warp bullshit.
Right.
Oh, yeah. They do that because they, like... Scotty finds a way to beam them off an ice planet and onto a ship.
Yes.
Which is like, it doesn't make sense, but at the same time, it went by so fast that I didn't care. I was like, yeah, get him back on the ship, whatever.
You just described all J.J. Abrams movies. I don't understand why this is happening, but the action is going, so it's fine.
Yeah, because it's just like, you know, if, because you can make something, it's just like, just do it fast enough. Oh, right. Okay, but anyway, I get the sense that we both, that like maybe the Tilly short trek was our least favorite. I mean, it was my least favorite. How about you?
Right. And I definitely say the next one, which is called Calypso, I believe.
Yes.
Is one of my favorites, I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Of these four.
Yeah, I would definitely rank it Mud, Calypso, Saru, Tilly.
Okay, because I would say Saru, Calypso, Mud, Tilly, personally.
Yeah, everybody's going nuts for this. Saru episode.
Yeah, I like Saru.
The whole
man.
Internet's freaking out about this Saru episode.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, let's just talk about the Saru episode real quick.
Okay.
The longer we talk about it. I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, I didn't really learn anything that I don't think I knew. I mean, it is great to see the scene with Saru and Georgiou.
Right.
Because
right.
it really hits the father-mother relationship home.
Yeah.
And it strengthens a lot of episodes in season one where Saru is, like, devastated that Georgiou was killed.
Right, right.
But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, oh, you're, it's like, do what the elders say. Do it was like Moana meets Star Trek.
Right.
And I'm like, it's fine. I've just seen this before. But what did you think?
What I like about the Saru episode, and I can't remember what the name of it is off the top of my head. What I like about it is that it posits that Starfleet is this organization that a random member of a species that is like hunted by these like super technological beings can find out about, build a transmitter, contact those people, and they will find a way to get into contact with this random... It basically posits Starfleet as this super benevolent organization that will find people in need, help them out, and get them to... like, get them the help they need. And maybe... That's
cool.
Maybe what's her name? Maybe Georgiou was, like, breaking, like, Prime Directive stuff to go get Saru. But Saru's need to do something more and strive to be better than what his culture and his people were telling him he could do, that is super... That's just something I want to see on screen, especially in a Star Trek thing. And Discovery has kind of hewed towards the darker side of what a Star Trek thing does. They're in war all the time, so they're making these rough decisions and killing more people than people think they should do in Star Trek. But just seeing such a idealistic, like... I want to go out and make a better life for myself. I just love seeing a character express that. So Saru having that was great.
That I agree with everything you said. Like that is neat that you can kind of like send a message in a bottle to Starfleet that they are like explorers who will want to talk to anybody who's developed the technology to do it. I think that is neat.
Mm-hmm.
I also something that I thought of. Oh, also, it makes Georgiou a better character,
right?
Which is cool. It's that it's just like, yeah, she like argued for a long time with Starfleet to be able to like break first contact protocols because she thought what someone did was cool. Like,
absolutely, and
that's cool.
Her point is proven out and borne out by Saru being a very good captain, or not? Well, he's kind of
he is a good
interim captain. Yeah, right.
Still.
But being a very valued member of that crew and also one of a kind. Like, he is the only Kelpian you ever see in Starfleet. And, like, it's a good way to introduce a new species and also give a reason why he's the only one we've ever seen ever. So I just love that explanation, everything that they did there, really.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. That is very well sewed up. Obviously, why aren't there Kelpians in TNG, Voyager?
Yep.
That's fucking brilliant. The thing I like about Kelpians is
Doug
they
Jones.
Literally... What?
Doug Jones? Like, the one reason you'd love this alien species?
I mean, there's a million... I love Doug Jones for a million reasons. But what is it? They are the antithesis of Kirk. So Kirk is this... Kirk is brave, bold, wants to explore... no matter the risks. Saru and the Kelpians are fearful, resigned to their fate, born to die. They have like a gland that they're scared all the time, and they have a gland that makes them super scared.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's a fear boner, if you will.
Yes, exactly. It's just really cool to like develop a race that you would never want to be.
Right.
And then hear the stories. Because, like, look, you watch TOS, you want to be Kirk. Mm-hmm. Or you want to be Spock. Or it would be cool to be a Klingon. It would be cool to be a Romulan. Like, it would not be cool to be a Kelpian. It would not be cool.
And I think it's kind of developing off of Spock is super logical. Like, Spock only thinks with his brain first. And then you take that and then you go in a completely different direction, which is he is conditioned and absolutely biologically trained to think only with run away, like do not go towards this danger. And Starfleet is so often saying we have to figure these things out, usually using logic and stuff like that. But that is a fun thing to do with that character.
Yeah, which makes it like, which makes his season one arc fucking fantastic.
Right.
Because, you know, he starts out terrified and it's like, well, he has good reason to be like the XO just like to try to pull a military coup.
Yeah.
And now he's working for a crazy guy. He's working for a Lorca.
He's also in a place where they literally eat you. Like, Kelpians are the delicacy that everybody goes for.
Yeah, but at the end of season one, he's like captaining a starship through the heart of an intergalactic war machine, destroying its core with photon torpedoes, then teleporting back to the like, by the end of it, he's doing the coolest thing you can do in Star Trek.
Right, right.
And it's just like, yeah, way to go. Way to fucking go, Doug Jones.
Absolutely. It kind of makes me like regret that they're not having him be the captain like in future seasons, because like they kind of just keep taking it away from him. Like he's going to be captain for a short amount of time and then just nah. We're going to have Pike up in here now.
I think it is interesting. I hope that every season of Discovery has new a captain. Captain.
Right.
Kind of like how in the Harry Potter, there's always a new Defense of the
Dark Arts
teacher.
All right.
Because it's like every captain in Star Trek is always dope as fuck.
Right, right.
And it's one of the reasons I loved Lorca is I was like, what if you had to work for like a shitty captain?
Yeah.
Because it's like we've all got jobs where we work for people who we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, look, if you had a boss like Captain Picard or Captain Kirk, you'd follow them into hell. Often your boss is like the owner's son.
Right, right.
Like, often your boss is someone who sucks, who only has the job because they've been around a long time.
Mm-hmm. Or they know somebody, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Or they're Nepotism. Somebody's friend.
Right.
Like, I remember at Mad TV, like, one of the bosses, it's like, why does she have this job? Because she knows where all the bodies are buried. Like, the reason this person I work for has this job is because otherwise she would rat on a bunch of problems.
Ooh,
like, she would, like, rat out a bunch of, like, shady practices. I don't want to get too deep into it.
Damn.
But it's like, so Captain Pike in all of the advertisements for season two looks like the smiliest, happy-go-luckiest dude.
Right.
And it's
right.
Like, what's gonna happen to this guy's legs? Like, are they gonna well, like,
he's in that machine, what? Right? In the original series, he gets put in that machine where he can only like hit once for yes and two times for no or whatever, right?
Yeah, he gets put in like the beep chair.
Right.
Like he can't even like move his arms. He's like in an iron lung. So it's just like, I love how they're building him up to, because it's like, all right, working for Lorca would be shitty. So let's give you the coolest, smiliest, bestest captain ever.
Right.
He looks like Kirk. They have him wearing Kirk's jacket. Mm-hmm. He's smiling like Kirk. And now it's like an alien going to chop off his legs and then beat his arms to death with them. Like, what's going to happen to this guy? I can't wait to see what happens to this guy.
We got the fascist dictator captain in season one, and now we're getting the Norman Rockwell version of the best captain ever. Like, essentially the thing you'd want out of a captain. So I think it'll be interesting to see what they do, because we know he can't die, right? We know, like,
nope. He
has to survive into the cage.
He'll wish he did, but he can't die. He's going to clearly suffer a face worse than death in this series, and I can't wait to see it.
Now, it sounds like we're kind of, like, talking a little bit about beginning of season two stuff. We know that Spock is in season two.
Yeah.
You know, have you seen the cage? I haven't actually seen the cage, but I know things around it.
I saw half of the cage at a bar once, and I was just like, I don't like this actor playing Pike.
Right,
I was not, and then, it, like, they had, like, an old-timey Western doctor in the cage. And the only characters I liked in the cage were Spock and, ironically, Number One.
Who
was originally played by Mihiel Barrett Roddenberry, who plays Lux One of Troy, and is now being played by, what's her name?
Right?
Yeah.
Right, right. I'm really interested to see what they do with that cast. But, like, with Spock, in the cage episode, I think I know that he doesn't act like Spock should. So, like, he's more emotional, he's more prone to anger, like, that kind of thing that does not define Spock going forward. as they like kind of rejiggered what the show is going to be. So I'm wondering if they'll play into that in this season of Discovery, kind of make him a angrier Spock that is not as not the Spock as we know it, essentially.
I think the way they're going to do it. Oh, by the way, it's like I don't remember because like I just stopped watching the cage because I was like, this is boring. I want to see Captain Kirk.
Right.
But the thing that you really remember about the cage is that Spock's wearing a really shitty sweater.
Like which would affect your mood. Enterprise. For anyone who's had to wear a shitty sweater, you know that you become very irrationally angry a lot.
It's so itchy in that thing. Yeah. But I think the way they're going to play it is because like Burnham is calm to the point of insanity. Yeah. Like she's like she is so out of touch with her emotions that like she's never been in love as an adult in the series. So I think that the way that they're I think that a good way to play Spock would be emotional and erratic because he's half human.
Right.
And
right.
So if he hasn't figured out his shit, I think Spock could be a really cool yin to Burnham's icy yang.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Because they're brother and sister, so it's like it's just a cool dynamic. I think that's the dynamic they'll play. I don't know what they're going to do yet.
They're always adding siblings for Spock or family members for Spock. Everybody around Spock is somebody we want to get to know. So yes. I'm actually wondering whether they're going to bring Sarek into this as well. So you'll have the father playing off the son and daughter, adopted daughter, I guess, in this case.
I think Sarek is a main cast member.
Right, James Frain is coming back this season, I believe. So
yeah, at least he was in season one. Like in season one, Sarek was his name was in the credits every week. I think
because I remember
saying to myself when I'm watching season one, I'm like, they really got to bend over backwards to justify paying this guy as a main cast member and not as a guest cast member. Because like there'll be episodes of Discovery where they just like call him up on the phone.
Mm-hmm. He's not on the ship, so like how are they going to get to him this week? Yeah.
Yeah, I remember thinking to myself, like, what a mistake they made by paying him his regular cast. Because they would do that in Babylon 5, too. Like,
oh, really?
They would have regular cast members, and then it would be very clear they did not know how to use them. Like, in season 2 of Babylon 5, there's, like, a Star Fury pilot. Furies are, like, X-Wings, pretty much.
All right.
And it's like... He gets a really great first episode, and then they're like, we don't know what to do with this guy. And then he just gets killed by the shadows. Hey, can you hear me?
You just cut out there, but it's fine.
Oh, sorry. Well, I'm sure the audience will love it.
Oh, okay. It'll be great.
Speaking of things we love, your favorite episode is Calypso. Tell us why you love it so much.
Oh, my first episode was Saru episode, but second episode was Calypso. And yeah, I think Calypso, it's written by Michael Chabon. And he's going to be doing some writing for the Picard series as well, I think. That's what I believe I know.
Yes.
And I love the idea of in some far future, we have no idea what happens to the Discovery as a ship, but in some far future, this guy has been picked up by the Discovery ship, which is apparently just roaming around the universe. Which I have no idea how that's going to happen, but just knowing that far future exists for the Discovery is kind of cool to me. And then you pick up this guy, and he's kind of having to get used to this new situation that he's in. He falls in love with the computer. Not really falls in love. The computer falls in love with him. And I just love that concept. It's like Her, the movie with Joaquin Phoenix, where he falls in love with Scarlett Johansson voice, which you could probably fall in love with any part of Scarlett Johansson. But so... I just love that concept of in Star Trek, which is not the most romantic thing, as far as I know, that you would find love or some kind of connection and then kind of go your separate ways. I just love that. It's a very old world interpretation of a new world story.
I would disagree with you. It's like TOS is like non-stop romance, and I think one of the reasons TOS I think is the best Star Trek show is that it has human passions in it,
right?
every episode, Kirk is running into an ex-girlfriend of his. I'm not kidding. It's like oh, who's running the court martial against him? His ex-girlfriend, who's also a judge advocate general. Like, you know, they go down to a planet and it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, here's McCoy's ex-girlfriend and she's a monster lady now. Right. Like, you know, like how does Captain Kirk get information about Kang? He tries to seduce Kang's daughter. it's like, yeah. But
that screams that Kirk's getting a lot. Like he's getting the space sex, but where's the romance?
No. It's always like in the past. It's very 60s. Mm-hmm. It's always very Casablanca. Because, like,
so, all right.
In the episode with the court martial, like, he's talking to this woman who he used to date, and now she has to, like, try to put him in jail forever.
Okay.
And so it's just, you know, it's there's, like, some nice romantic tension there. Mm-hmm. You know, what could have been if these two had stayed together. But anyway, something you just said that I didn't realize until now is, mm-hmm. Well, this explains where Discovery is, doesn't it?
Right, it's like, floating off in space, nowhere, I guess.
Yeah. It's like, well, why isn't Discovery in TOS? Why isn't Discovery in the movies? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess at some point it just gets teleported way uh-huh. away from everything.
Right.
It's like, oh, that's a pretty good way to get rid of like. A really good piece of technology.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That explains why they don't have a warp ship. This ship must have warped way too far.
They went too far.
I think that the reliance on Funny Face and the reliance on Betty Boop. This, I thought that it was a little too much. It's like, it's one thing when like Star Trek references Shakespeare. Mm. It's another thing when Star Trek references Gilbert and Sullivan. You know what I mean? Yeah, where I'm just like, look, I'll buy Shakespeare, but I don't know that the HMS Pinafore is like that good. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Well, I guess in a far future where essentially all of media is available for you to consume. Which yeah. I'd assume that's what System Federation has worked out. You'd get somebody who's the Betty Boop fan, wouldn't you?
Yeah, no, I mean, you would. And it's just like, I don't know, for me, I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't care about Betty Boop or Funny Face.
Right, right.
Like when they show up, here's the first thing I think. Oh, I guess CBS owns Betty Boop.
right, yeah, yeah.
Like that would happen... In Babylon 5, they would do that too, but I thought it was better. Like, this one character really fucking loved Looney Tunes. Okay. Michael Garibaldi was always watching Looney Tunes because it's like his character was a lot like Daffy Duck or Bugs Bunny. Like, he was very wily and he would like trick you. But I'm, you know, with that, I think to myself, like, well, when I was 9 years old, I was watching these weird cartoons from the 40s. Right. So, like, maybe Looney Tunes will survive, but it's like, Betty Boop's not good.
Yeah.
Wait, are you like a booper?
No.
Are you like a big... Do you like chip boop? Like, are you a big boop head?
Just signing into my cartoon freak profile, Betty Boop fan 19307. No, I'm not a fan of Betty Boop.
Yeah. It's just boop boopy doo. Oh, boy. Whoa! It's like... Were you supposed to jerk off to that? Like, was that the idea behind Betty Boop?
That was a series. That's what it was.
That's what I'm thinking, because it's like, all right, they would play these Betty Boop things. You'd pay a nickel to see them. You know, at the Nickelodeon or whatever. Or you're like, I don't know, maybe you'd go to one of those. Like, maybe there'd be like a Magic Lantern show of Betty Boop. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's like 1940s waifuism, I guess.
It must be.
I gotta dig more in a boop. Oh, well, look, bottom line, I didn't know Siobhan wrote that. I thought it was great. I thought the script was great.
Right,
the actor,
right.
I thought all the acting was great. I thought they really did a good job of making the ship haunted. Because it's kind of like, It's like, well, why wouldn't they have all the lights on? I don't know. They're saving power or something.
Right, and it's same set, just kind of dress it differently or make it slightly darker so it doesn't look exactly the same. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, I thought that they dressed it very well. I was a real sucker for that scene where they were dancing together, though.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, it's seriously good.
Yeah, that scene was great. Like, it's interesting. This one is the one I think we agree on. It's both our second favorite.
Okay. All right.
Cool. But the mud episode I thought was fucking fantastic. I think like the mud, both this mud short treks and
his episode in Discovery
and the mud Groundhog's Day episode.
Right.
I genuinely think they are two of the best pieces of Star Trek media ever made.
Wow.
Because it's just like, this guy hates the Federation.
Yeah.
And for once, you're kind of like, yeah, I get why you would hate the Federation.
Yeah, they're like, cops. The Federation are cops.
Yes. You're like stepping on your action and they're stepping on your schemes.
Yeah. Which is why it's like Quark in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Because it's like, whenever anybody hates the Federation, it's always for like a dumb reason. Like,
the
Federation said they'd help my planet, and they didn't. Like, that's why Nero hates the Federation in Kelvin 1.
Is that why he waits around for 20 years?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's because he has to, he hates the Federation because Spock didn't help enough. And it's like, Spock tried really hard to save Romulus, buddy. Like... Mm-hmm. I'm sorry you lost Romulus, but like, don't blame Spock. Like, blame the Romulan Science Council for not being persuasive enough.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like, yeah. Look. I'm sorry that your planet got fucking Krypton.
Right.
But like, don't blame Spock and kill Kirk's dad and all that. Don't do all this. What are you doing? Remember when he like kills some poor innocent Indian American captain? It's just
that
like
awesome.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. He shouldn't die.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you gotta be cool to this guy, Nero. But anyway, yeah, love. I don't want to spoil the ending. Uh-huh. If you haven't watched any of the short treks, you should at least watch this one. Mud's caper is the thing I love about Mud so much is his plans are always great.
Yeah, yeah.
The only reason he doesn't steal the Discovery is because he wants more money.
Right,
The only reason Mud doesn't win in that episode is that he's too muddy. He gets too greedy. And
also
I get it,
past,
Mud.
His past crawls back to him because they just call somebody that he fucked with previously.
It's so great, though, the ending to that episode. Because like, everyone always complains about... Everyone's always like, no, Discovery's too dark. And it's like, no, their solution to this episode is to call his jilted ex-wife.
Yeah, yeah.
And have his ex-wife grab him by the ear and be like, Harry.
And also, that was an episode where we saw him murder Lorca several times, which is the most hilarious thing. We got to see Jason Isaacs act like he was, like, suffocating out in space. It's so good. That episode is amazing.
Yes, it's the first time ever that they do the thing that we always think they should do, which is to use the teleporters as offensive weapons.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Like, it's like whenever I'm watching Star Trek and the Borg are invading a ship, I'm always like, hey, why aren't all of you teleporting
into space?
Yes. Why aren't you teleporting all the Borgs into space, into the warp core? Like, combat in Star Trek should be...
teleporter base.
It should be like a wizard battle. Like all these guys are trying to teleport bombs onto your ship, and so you are constantly trying to teleport them back, or you're trying to nullify their frequencies, or all this shit. But anyway, it's like the thing I love about how many times Captain Lorca dies is it's like that joke would not work with Captain Picard.
Right. We wouldn't want to see him. Yeah. Right. Right.
We wouldn't want to see him. You wouldn't want to see Archer. You definitely don't want to see like Janeway or Kirk.
Uh-huh.
Like, just die 80 times, but it's like,
right.
This guy, they wrote this character, this Lorca character so well that they made it funny when he dies.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's really smart. So anyway, I thought the episode was great. I did not see the twist coming.
That was what won me over about the whole episode, because as I'm watching the episode and as it's kind of like he's flashing back to previous times that he's used these methods to like trick people, I was kind of going with it, but it also felt kind of like Family Guy, where like Family Guy just like randomly cuts to some joke or something, and I kind of got bored of that repetition. But then the ultimate reveal, which is that
delete that. Hey, we're back. Erich just spoiled the thing, and I just don't want him to spoil the thing because I think you should see this.
Yeah.
See the Mutt episode. Right. See the Mutt episode. See Calypso. See the Sir episode. Sounds like we both agree you could kind of skip the Tilly episode.
Right, right.
Oh, I'll tell you why the Tilly episode is important, listener, so you don't have to see it. This lady finds a way, and again, spoiler alert here. The stowaway found a way to replicate the lithium.
Yeah,
and
right.
So I guess that's why, like, there's so much dilithium now.
Dilithium isn't a problem. Like, mining dilithium or whatever they do.
Yeah, and I guess that, like, sets us on the first step to utopia, even though it doesn't, because there's definitely an episode of TOS where a bunch of dilithium miners are getting killed by the Horta.
Ah, really?
So it's like, oh, they're still mining dilithium, though. Thanks, lady. I don't know. Look, if you're watching season two and dilithium comes up, and all of a sudden someone's like, we have a lot more dilithium now. Like, this is why, okay?
That would be why. Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also, like, this space princess gives Tilly a piece of dilithium that I assume will save the day at some point. So if you're wondering, really? Yeah.
That makes the short treks, like, absolutely vital. You need to then watch them in order, like, she's just going to pull something out of her ass and be like, oh, I have this piece of dilithium that somebody gave me at some point.
Yes, that will happen. I guarantee it.
Oh my gosh!
I guarantee you that'll happen. So if when you're watching Discovery season two, and at some point she pulls like a piece of lithium out of her jumpsuit, like it's from the short.
That's track. What it's from. Right. Right.
Yeah. Hey. Well, I gotta go. But hey, Erich, why don't you tell people where they can follow more? I mean, you know, obviously if they're not listening to Izakino, they should be.
Absolutely, we're on Izakino on iTunes. That's Mumpy and Me's movie review podcast. We're on iTunes, we're on Google Play, we're on Spotify as well. So if you check us out there, also you can find those episodes on Monkey Jones YouTube, not YouTube. He's not on YouTube. His website, monkeyjones.tv.
And you guys do them live on Twitch, right?
We do. We stream the episodes live. We have a pre-show and an after show, so we have a good time.
Yeah, tell people where your Twitch channel is so they can follow it and get notifications when you're live.
Good point. I believe it's twitch.com/monkey.jones, but let me be sure of that.
Yeah, I think it's twitch.tv/monkeyjones. Do you have your own Twitch channel?
I do not, no. I'd mainly do stuff through YouTube.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, that's enough calls to action there. But it's like, Izakino is one of my favorite podcasts. Me and Sriracha listen to it all the time. Find it on iTunes. It's called Is It Kino. Mm-hmm. And then you can watch them do live episodes at twitch.tv/monkeyjones. And, of course, you know, if you're listening to this show and you want to support the stuff that I do, you can go to patreon.com/stereos.
Yep.
You get early podcast episodes for just $1. We'll probably release this video early too, to my patrons. Okay. But you know, if you're poor like me and you can't afford it, like all of our podcasts are free because it's like, look, you know, if you get punished for being poor, that's the story of mine and probably Erich's life.
We are a pro Federation podcast.
Yes.
And we want the socialist, post-scarcity utopia.
Can't get here right. Because I know a cup of money is scarce right now. My health insurance is scarce. There's a lot of scarcity right now.
Asterios needs that gold press Latinum, guys.
I sure do. Oh, yeah, they mentioned Latinum for the first time.
They did. I was amazed by that.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny when the bounty hunter was like, so, how are you going to give me the Latinum? Will it be in a sack or just one big bar? And I was like, that's so funny.
Very
hey, cool. Well, anyway, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Disco Twins, a Star Trek Discovery watch-along podcast. We will be live probably the night of or the day after the new episode of Star Trek Discovery premieres. Why don't we do it live on YouTube? Let's do it like right away. Yeah,
totally. Let's do that.
Oh, okay, cool. So what's your YouTube again, buddy?
Erich. Just search Erich on YouTube.
Yeah, search Erich, E-R-I-C-H on YouTube. Mm-hmm. We'll be live this Thursday night or Friday morning. We'll figure it out. But just follow, look out for a notification. We'll tweet about it. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Goodbye, everybody.